So, Weston, it was about 5 years ago that Luke and I were recording. It was either the first or second episode, and we talked about who we'd want to bring on as a guest. And you were the first person that we mentioned. And so this has been a long time coming. How are you feeling about the pressure of holding out for 5 years before we finally made this happen?
I hope I don't let you down.
I don't think you could, Weston.
So for
I haven't
for
done those... podcasts in many years, so it's a big moment for me too.
For those who don't know Weston Ruder, perhaps you could intro Jonathan.
I had the privilege of meeting Weston. It was, more than 5 years ago, 7 years, I don't know. I saw this little company called XWP, it was actually called X-Team WP at the time, had put out a shingle saying that they were looking for developers. And at the time, I don't even know what I was doing. I had so many freelance projects, but something about the positioning, the messaging, like struck my interest. So I filled out the form and you were the one who responded back. And you just asked me some basic questions. You were quite kind about it. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm this kind of a developer. I'm not this serious. But we started the conversation. And I think what I ended up saying was something to the effect of, hey, I could probably help you guys with sales. And you connected me with Tina, which then led to our first conversation, and it wasn't long after that I joined the team. But yeah, you were my very first context for jumping into that enterprise world of WordPress development, and many shenanigans went on from there.
My first memory of you is being on a video call with you. I think we were on site in Australia at News Corp, and you were joining over video, and yep, you were working on that project with us. That was a long time ago.
That was quite the experience. What about you, Luke? What was your first interaction with
us? Yeah, you know, I had joined the team maybe like 2 months before WordCamp Austin in, I don't know, 20 whatever. And yeah, Weston had been...
20 whatever, that's the official.
Yeah, exactly. And Weston had been... We don't need to give away our ages here. Weston had been reviewing my pull requests. He'd been code reviewing me. And I was thinking, man, this Weston guy, man, he hates me so much. Look, he's so hard on these pull requests. But I was learning so much. And anyway, once we flew to Austin for WordCamp Austin, we were launching Stream. And I don't know if you recall, we had this great Airbnb. And you and I sat down next to each other at like the kitchen... islandy thing, and with our laptops, and you helped me to set up, I don't know what it was, probably PHP Storm with, you know, all of the various debugging tools. And I realized, oh, he doesn't hate me. He's just a straight shooter when it comes to pull requests. And it was hard for the first like month, but then I think that set me up for my career in that. When it comes to developers, you want developers who are just going to tell you exactly how it is in the pull request and then have all of that kindness and humanity outside of the pull request. Does that make sense? Anyway, so let's get into the question. This is my first question for you. You were my mentor early on, right, Weston? Like this is how I was thinking of you at the time. I don't know if you realize that, but what if you were mentoring someone in that same position today? The world has changed a lot. Like, what would be your advice to those new devs that are just getting started in WordPress?
That's a loaded question. Take it away, Weston.
First of all, I think I would have a lot to learn myself, because coming into the project afresh, you see things differently. So I think I've gotten into a rut, maybe, and I do things a certain way that maybe I should be optimizing how I'm doing something, or rethinking how I'm doing something to be more efficient, or coming at it from a different angle. So I think, those opportunities, first of all, to sit down next to each other to share our workflows is really beneficial, not just for the new contributor or the new team member, but also for the experienced one, because you have to explain your workflow, and then if I had to explain my workflow sometimes now, I would think, even if I try to explain it to myself, because I've just been setting up this new computer and I've been trying to document everything and how I've been setting it up, and I've been realizing this is not making sense. This is really not an efficient way of working. So yeah, I think being able to have that perspective, fresh perspective, seeing things with new eyes, I think for myself, I think I would get more out of, or maybe just as much out of, sharing my workflow with someone else's.
So what did you use on your new Mac to do like a local development environment?
On my new Mac?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm using everything, I guess. Well, local WP, WPEnv, Lando.
Cool.
For WordPress environments, and then I'm using PHP Storm and iTerm and the classics like that.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to that blog post, Weston, where you go back through those setup notes and make a list of all of your favorite software.
I should. I was just seeing Jeff Paul post that on Twitter yesterday.
/uses. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, and I was thinking, should I do that too? But then I think people are gonna look at my list of things that I use and think, wow, he's lame. He doesn't know about this thing, you know. So part of me is like excited to learn from others and what they're sharing on their posts like that. But then I think I feel anxiety about, should I share mine too? But I should because of what I said before. You learn
That's
from
how you
sharing
learn.
Your perspective, learn from seeing others' perspectives too.
So before we go further, I want to take a step back and just touch on a few more points of history for those who may not know. And also this be a way of like giving them a little bit more context on the work that you've done, Weston. So rewind back to this agency that the three of us shared in common. It became XWP. We ended up doing, as you mentioned, like these big enterprise projects, such as working with News Corp Australia. And you were the CTO at XWP and responsible for like architecture, code review, mentoring, like a whole series of things in that regard. And one of the things that stood out to me, and we'll touch on this more later, was the amount of work that we did with a particular component in WordPress called the customizer. And with News Corp in Australia in particular, one of the things that they really valued about working with XWP was the degree to which we were also simultaneously, and when I say we, it was primarily you, contributing the things that were being worked on for the client into the project. And that opened up a whole new line of thinking for me about what a commercial and open source relationship can look like, because News Corp was for profit. And they also recognized that it was really important for them to stay aligned with core WordPress. And they saw the value in what you were doing for them commercially and also contributing to the project. So we went from that to a number of large enterprise projects that you were involved in, and ultimately began to work with Google on several big projects related to performance and a mix of different things. And then you ended up being invited to and just joined Google directly, where you continued on. And how many years were you there at Google?
6.5.
Yeah. So, wow. So much time has gone by. That's wild. So, and in that time frame, there's a lot of stuff that you've done. You've contributed to core. You've been a core committer for how long has it been?
10 years today, actually, was the announcement post.
Awesome. So, 10 years of being active in core. The customizer was, I would describe, as your baby for a long time. You advocated for, you weren't the only one, of course, working on it. There's a bunch of folks, but like, as far as I was concerned, the amount of time and effort and energy and care that you put into it, a little bit later, I want to talk more about the legacy of that, but there's a lot of context that you've got for like WordPress. And now you've also had a lot of experience going from an agency that was, 10 when I came on to more than 50, maybe closer to 75 or so by the time that that you left. And then, of course, you got big company experience at Google, so which has its whole a whole realm of things within that. So there's a lot that you've seen. And for those who just didn't know, I wanted them to have a bit wider of a context for the perspective that you're bringing to the table.
And that the Google time is now at an end.
Yes, and you've just wrapped up your time there with Google. Luke, anything you were going to add?
Well, just that I don't want to overlook Weston's contributions to performance, because he was the customizer guy for a period of time, and then he switched track to performance, and he has been super, super active through Google also to the performance team, the WordPress / performance projects, specifically is, I think, where I see a lot of your commits go. And before that, it was Core Web Vitals and AMP. And I was looking at the commit history for the WordPress / performance GitHub repo, and you are far and above the highest committer on that project. So I was wondering, why the focus on performance? Why, you were on Customizer for a while. Gutenberg came along, right? Kind of seemed like Customizer wasn't going to receive focus, and then switched to performance.
Yeah, so WordPress historically has struggled with performance because WordPress is an open ecosystem and there's no limitations on what you can do for good or bad. And so if you look at the CWV Tech report, it's cwvtech.report is the URL. You can see
that's Core Web Vitals for those who don't know.
Yeah. Core Web Vitals. You can see how WordPress stacks up against other popular content management systems, and WordPress is at the bottom, not far from the others, but that's partially due to the work we've been doing in performance. But yeah, so because WordPress has struggled with performance, it's an area of need, and nobody likes a slow web page. And so I was happy to work on that.
Big Scoots are a managed WordPress hosting company. And if you're anything like me, you already use a managed WordPress hosting company. Why do you need a new one? Well, I decided to try it out for myself to try to help answer that question. Their support was amazing. I know everybody says that, but I really like chat-based support, and they really nailed it. I also loved their Cloudflare integration directly in my Big Scoots dashboard, and the SSH and WP CLI was a breeze to set up and use. I was up and running with WP CLI in less than a minute. If you want to try out Big Scoots, you can get 98% off your first 2 months. If you sign up for a managed hosting plan, just use the word crossword at checkout. Go to bigscoots.com/crossword, bigscoots.com/crossword for 98% off your first 2 months.
So what I'd like to do, for those who don't know, Weston, can you give us a little bit of a history lesson on the customizer? Like, how would you describe it for someone who, because it's still there, it's an active part of WordPress, but how would you describe it for someone who doesn't know what it is, and what was it about it that drew so much of your time and interest over the years?
Well, when you're working on a site as a builder or a publisher, one of the worst things is to make a change, but then not know the impact that change is going to have on the site without going to the site front end yourself. And while you are seeing that change, then any other visitors to the site would also see that change. And so that adds a lot of risk to make a change, and adds a lot of anxiety to the process of making changes to your site. So with the customizer, it provides you with a sandbox to make any change you want and see a live preview of what impact that change is going to have. And I think I used to say, what happens in the customizer stays in the customizer until you hit publish. And so that I really liked that aspect of what the customizer provides, and it was empowering to be able to to be able to make changes to my site or a client's site, and then to see what the changes are going to be without breaking the site for other people. And so that's why I was interested in the customizer and saw it as an opportunity to invest in for providing to clients to enhance their editorial workflows and site customization capabilities.
Especially big clients like News Corp, who would want to not only preview their changes, but maybe schedule things. Oh, isn't that a feature of the customizer that you can schedule change set to go live on a particular date?
That's something that was added in 4.9, the ability to make changes in the customizer, save a draft of those changes, and to share a URL to view those changes, you know, for anybody, even if they're not logged in. If you have the URL with the UUID in it, anybody can then preview the changes. And then, yeah, you can schedule those changes to go live.
So that reminds me of one of the more impactful experiences that I had in sort of observing your efforts on the News Corp Australia project in particular. We had a situation where they ended up having thousands of widgets that they wanted to run like within the customizer. There was a lot of like special stuff that was going on there, and we were running into some pretty significant performance issues with that, where it's like it was really bogging it down. And I don't remember the specifics of it, and it's okay if you don't, but it's been a long time. But you ended up working with a couple of folks and brought a change to core that to me was a great example of a collaboration where it, like, because with WordPress, of course, we want changes that benefit as many people as possible. And there's not a lot of people with thousands of widgets in core, but you led efforts on doing what I would describe as some of the hardest work to figure out a way to improve core architecture to accommodate their needs while also providing benefit for the rest, even if most of them wouldn't notice it. So at least in my mind, like that particular effort was part of what, like where I was like, yeah, it just makes sense to me. Like Weston took his interest in the customizer and this growing interest in performance even then to bring a change to core that most people wouldn't even know or care about. But if you began to push the edges and started to deal with higher and higher volume, there was stuff that was in there to accommodate for that. And to me, I've always remembered that as an example of, at least to me, an ideal type of collaboration between commercial interests and something that can benefit an open source project. So,
yeah, from what I remember, yeah, there were thousands of widgets, but not all used on the same page. There'd be different sidebar
permutations. Yeah, they had lots of
like dynamically created sidebars for different templates. But the problem in core is because core doesn't anticipate that you're going to have thousands of widgets. It loads all the widgets that you have into memory.
Yes,
with every page load. So the work that we did on that project was to, as I remember, lazy load those widgets that are only needed for that page and not load the ones that we didn't need.
Yep.
But that was, 10 years ago or something. So my memory's hazy.
And it's still there. Like last I checked, even if you don't, most people aren't making use of the customizer, but the underpinnings of it are there. And, the last thing for me on that is, in your mind, Weston, what was some of the legacy of the customizer work? Because obviously, Gutenberg came along, and there's been a whole lot of innovation and progress since then. But at least from my point of view, there was a lot that was done in the customizer that's had an influence and an impact even to this day, even for folks who don't know that it's there. How do you think about the legacy of that focus of work?
Well, like I said, the customizer provides you with a sandbox to make changes without fear of those changes being breaking the site. And so the whole idea there is that you have a preview, a live preview, and that is carried on in the block editor and the site editor, where you get the live preview experience in some ways better because you're in line editing aspect of the page.
There was a push for a while there to be able to inline edit content within the customizer. Do you remember that?
Yes. There's the customized inline editing plugin, which shows that it is, it could be done there as well. And to me,
that was like a transition point from the customizer to go, we could go in this route. We could go down this route. This works. This is where we want to end up. And that's sort of birthed Gutenberg. I don't know if that's true. That's how it worked in my head.
Well, in some ways, the customizer preview is better than the site editor because it's actually rendering the front end PHP code, whereas in the site editor, it's all rendered with JavaScript. And so if you have PHP filters that are running that customize how certain blocks are being rendered on the front end, that's not going to show up in the site editor. So site editor is, it's a close approximation of what you're going to get on the front end. But I think some aspects of the customizer have yet to be ported over to the site editor, I'd say. So like the ability to save pending changes in a change set as a draft, to be able to then share as a preview link so that someone else can go to the front end of the site and see those changes before they go live. I don't think that's not yet a capability, but it's certainly possible.
And we, of course, still don't have a way of previewing a post that was published but has been updated. What is that going to look like on the front end? Which, you know, we once were able to do using the inline editing customizer plugin. So, cool. Let's switch now then to AMP, accelerated mobile pages, and
your favorite thing.
Yeah, you know, because when we're
a big advocate for this and a major fan over the years.
When we were together at XWP, we had Google as a client, and we were working on the plugin for WordPress, the AMP plugin. And I kind of noped out of that. Right, I was like, I'm not interested in this. I don't like AMP. I think AMP is bad for the web, and I wrote a bunch of blog posts about it. As time went on, we talked about it on Crossword and were pretty negative about it, specifically me. Meanwhile, our friend Weston is, you know, working hard on trying to make it better, especially integrating with WordPress. Now, AMP, you know, I think the world breathed a sigh of relief as AMP began to wind down, at least the part of the world that I live in. And
Australia?
I guess like, what do you call it? Yeah, metaphorically, like indie web or privacy, I don't know, whatever. And I guess, well, we don't have to rehash those old debates about AMP. I think that's kind of uninteresting. But, there was a lot of criticism of AMP at the time about, like, yeah, the performance gains, but they came at the cost of privacy and platform lock-in. So AMP aside, because it's basically wound down now, right?
It's still going, but it's definitely getting less development than before.
Okay. So, but it made me think, and here's the question is, do you think that performance and privacy are always going to be at cross purposes to one another, specifically in the browser? Because, you know, a lot of times the performance optimizations that we want to do are pulling information about the particular client machine, the particular browser environment. So are they always going to be at cross purposes to one another, privacy and performance?
Okay, so AMP actually has privacy as one of its key design principles, because the goal, the user experience for AMP was to enable an instant page load experience from search or from other surfaces. And in order to have that instant page load experience, you have to pre-render the page in the background. Otherwise, there's going to always be some latency and rendering the page. So that's why this whole AMP cache is a thing, because it guarantees that the accessing the page will be fast, and that the page could be pre-rendered in the background without leaking information about the client to the origin server. So all analytics that would fire when visiting the page are withheld from being forwarded on until you actually click on the page to view. So in terms of privacy, if you're already on Google search in this example, so there's no secret that you're going to a page because you're already on Google search to visit that page. So in that way, there's no privacy leakage. So that's why the AMP cache needs to exist, so that we can have that pre-render experience. And then for the vendor lock-in question, I don't see that really, because it's open web stack. It's just web components, JavaScript, CSS, HTML. So the only lock-in I see is the same lock-in you would get with React or Vue or Angular. So it's because AMP is a web component framework, HTML framework, it's not really different in that way. And if you want to migrate away from AMP, you can easily do so using another web framework. And it's all, you know, if you're running AMP on your website, you can go straight to your website and view the page without any connection to Google. It's all directly on your origin.
I wonder if there was a degree to which the concerns expressed, because this is something that struck me a couple of times. You're a good example to me of someone at Google, and I've gotten to know a few others over the years as well, that like really cares about performance, that cares about like the technical aspects of a given thing. And I've wondered the degree to which sometimes that just gets lost within the larger arc of Google's story. And in the case of AMP in particular, there was a lot of general distrust that even if there was a perfectly sound technical explanation for it, and there wasn't that risk, there was still this, that's what Google says, though, that could then lead to people to, even if it was perfectly sound, throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater because of their general distrust for the degree of power and control, if you will, that Google would have over people's destinies based on the rankings in search engines. Because that was the heart of the accusation, is they're like, hey, if we want to get better search results, we need to use AMP, which felt like a forcing of the hand, at least for people that I recall expressing their concerns, even if there was no technical basis for it. I don't know. What are any thoughts on that, Weston?
Well, AMP has never been a ranking factor as far as I know. It's always been performance is a ranking factor. So the fact that an AMP page loads fast bodes well for the AMP page. But if you have another page that's not built with AMP, then it's fast, then it will perform the same in terms of ranking as far as I know.
Which is, so going back to Luke's question though for a moment, part of what I'm hearing from you then, Weston, is that in your mind, privacy and performance don't have to be at odds, that there's not an inherent trade-off there. And at least it's not one that you've been seeing in your experience or looking back at this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and things have evolved a lot. Now with there's this thing called speculative loading, or speculation rules API. This is now being used on Google search to do some of that same prefetching, pre-rendering, using an alternative mechanism. I think there's some C involved, but I think there's a lot with Core Web Vitals as well. It provides us an open standard to target, rather than with AMP. AMP was developed before Core Web Vitals, so
yep.
And it was the inspiration for Core Web Vitals in part. But with AMP, there was this AMP HTML specification, which was the target for what a good web page would be, according to AMP. But in reality, it wasn't I mean, it tried to do the highest performance things. AMP tried to embody best practices for how to develop a web page, but there were some pragmatic trade-offs that had to be made. And so you could definitely develop a web page that was faster than an AMP page, but it was intended to be to get you 90% of the way much more easily. And so, but now we have Core Vitals. So now we don't need to target some specification. We could target just the web, HTML, and we have these metrics that are agnostic to any framework or platform, which we can use to measure whether something is a good loading experience.
So there are two things that stand out to me looking back over the experience. First, there's Google's relationship with WordPress, which is one of the first things that struck me early on, is that everything else that people can think aside, like I remember when Google came to WordCamp Europe for the first time, we were all there, and a lot of folks were just like thrown off by the professionalism of their presence. And just assume, like people ask questions during the keynote of like, is Google trying to buy WordPress? And you know, there was a lot of like distrust partly, and Google learned from that and they did a better job at subsequent WordCamps. But at least to me, it seemed clear that there was this alignment of interests where if the web becomes proprietary and all walled garden, that's not good for Google. And if performance ends up being one of the factors that's being cited as a big barrier or a big knock against WordPress, then it makes sense to say, okay, if we can make performance in WordPress better, that makes it more accessible and there's less that the proprietary platforms can say against it. So to me, early on, all other things aside, it felt like there was this clear alignment of interest in a company like Google seeing a project like WordPress do well, which I feel like has been well demonstrated by the work that you and the performance team have done over the years and just making WordPress performance better. It's also interesting to me, and looking back at all this, of the legacy of like some of the work that was done on Customizer and how that's influenced and still has a role to play, I think, in the future of the full site editor and all those pieces are interconnected. And similarly, I hadn't made the connection. I didn't realize that Core Web Vitals came after AMP. But that makes sense to me that a lot of effort and energy went into it and you run into pragmatic boundaries at some point onto it. But then it's like, what's the legacy of it? And I think most people would agree that Core Web Vitals has been objectively valuable for the web as a whole to be a point of discussion and there to be tooling around. And I think WordPress has certainly benefited for it. So anyway, those are things that stand out to me in the arc of this almost a decade now.
And the other thing that it's really the Core Web Vitals project has led into is also your work on the Optimization Detective. Can you tell us a little bit about that project? I'm not sure that many people within WordPress are aware of Optimization Detective.
And before you do, Weston, I want to warn people that it only has 3 stars on the plugin repo. So of course, what? This means that there's 1 3-star review. So it means that people can't give it any serious look. No, I'm kidding, of course, please.
I'm just going to go five star it now.
I will say that it is early days, Optimization Detective. It actually goes back to a talk that Felix gave at WordCamp US back in 2020
something.
I think it was.
That's how you do it, Luke. More precise. 2020.
And actually, we were talking about the Austin meetup. That was, I was looking at my photos and it was 2014.
There you go.
We had that meetup. So 11 years ago.
Wow.
But Felix, he gave a talk about how the WordPress at the time, or in still, tries to have sensible defaults for optimizing how resources are prioritized on a page. Like, if there's a featured image on the page, then it's most likely going to be the largest contentful paint, the largest element that's printed on the page. And so that's the image that should get the first priority high attribute added to it. And also, it will add loading equals lazy or lazy load images after the third in the content and things like that. So he showed how you can query for all WordPress pages in HTTP archive and then gather statistics from HTTP archive about how commonly a certain element is the LCP element.
Oh yeah.
How many images are in the initial viewport, and all that information then fed into the defaults for which images get lazy loaded, which images get first party high, and so on. But those are statistically the most likely, but there's always going to be, I mean, that could be 50%, 51%, or, you know, so that is a approximation and it's not foolproof. So he ended his talk talking about how, what if there is a way to use visitors to the site to provide data about how the page is laid out so that WordPress can learn from visitors to be able to better optimize visits later on. So that's what this optimization detective project realizes, and it uses it takes a sampling of visits from mobile visitors, from desktop visitors, from tablet visitors, and it will capture which elements are in the initial viewport, which are not, and it stores that information in the local WordPress database without any PII or anything like that. And then that information then is used to then optimize the page so that the actual LCP element gets loaded with high priority.
And so if I'm on a 16-inch Mac here and I, you know, got my browser full screen and I load the web page, load a particular web page, your web page, Weston, I load your blog, and maybe once the page is loaded, maybe there's two images that are above the fold and the rest aren't. And so that information, the fact that there's two images above the fold and which two images they are on that particular URL, and the fact gets combined with the width of my screen and the height of my screen, and that gets stored in the database. And so then when Jonathan uses the same width browser, and same height, and, you know, has similar experience, goes to your website again, your site can then pull that information and go, oh, we can reliably expect that the 10 images below the fold can be lazy loaded.
That's right. And WordPress doesn't have, when it adds fetch priority high to the image that it thinks is going to be the largest contentful paint, it isn't taking into account screen size in any way. It doesn't know, the server doesn't know, at least WordPress doesn't know if it's a mobile device or a desktop device. I mean, there is the WP is mobile function, but that's not good to rely on. And that's not going to tell you what the dimensions are of the screen anyway. Yeah. And so what Optimization Detective does, or specifically the image prioritizer extension to Optimization Detective, it will add preload links for what the LCP image is on mobile and desktop with media queries to specifically target the viewport size, so that if you have a different LCP element on mobile versus desktop, you'll get that prioritized properly.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So, and it also does things like this for embeds as well and other things?
Yeah, the embed optimizer extension will capture the height of embeds after they, like for a...
Right. A like an X tweet post or something.
Blue sky post. the ones that resize, it will capture the final height of that element and then store that, and then we'll reserve that height for the element so that when the page loads, it will not cause a layout shift.
Chunking. Yeah.
Well, just before we go any further, Wes, so one of the things I'm curious about, because this to me strikes me as an example of something where there's a lot of thought and effort that's gone into this piece of work that most people don't really know that much about yet, which we can hope to see change soon. What would you describe? What's the vision for this optimization detective? Like, if a couple of years from now, like, you're really happy with the impact that it's had on the space, like, what would that look like? Like, where do you see this going?
Well, Optimization Detective is part of the Performance Lab plugin or suite of plugins. And Performance Lab is the main project that the core performance team works on. And it's a incubator of feature plugins that implement new performance features before they are proposed for WordPress Core. So if Optimization Detective is successful, then ultimately that would be the goal, is to have some version of it then merge into WordPress Core so that every site can benefit from getting these performance enhancements.
Is there any reason why someone would not want to install this plugin?
Well,
they don't care about performance. No, I'm kidding.
I mean,
it just sounds like a win all round, you know?
Well, like I said, it's early days, so it's currently in beta, and
beta.
There are still some issues to work out.
Isn't Gmail still in beta? No, I'm kidding.
No, not anymore. But while it does its best to account for scenarios like extremely high traffic sites, there can be an issue where, like, it'll capture what we call URL metrics, like a set of information about a given page load. It will store up to 3 of those URL metrics per viewport group. So 3 for mobile, 3 for desktop, 3 for tablet, and so on. And then once it's collected those, it won't collect anymore until the state of the page has changed. But if you have a ton of traffic, it could be that you get many, many clients that are submitting these URL metrics.
Especially if you have a ton of pages, right?
Yeah, that too. And so that's the scaling is a concern for extremely high traffic sites. And so that may cause you to hesitate to install. But we are working to address that by adding the ability to have an alternate mechanism for collecting those metrics. And that is, instead of using actual visitors to collect the metrics, to instead collect them by, like, when your edit posts in the admin, to then collect those measurements by the browser of the editor.
Oh, interesting.
So that in the background, it can capture the mobile, tablet, desktop metrics, and then also to provide a way to, like, an admin screen to batch collect metrics. Yeah. And then also another thing we're looking into is the ability to, like, run a tier script to collect that information for across an entire site, like with some WP CLI integration. So those are several things that we're looking at for those high traffic, high scalability sites.
There are so many WordPress plugins. So how do you pick the right one? You could go off star rating or reviews or recently updated, but for me, I choose plugins from proven developers who I know and trust. And that's why I am genuinely excited about EventKoi. It's an events plugin coming very soon from Leslie Sim and Ahmed Fouad, the team that originally bought you the amazing newsletter glue. I've had a chance to play with the demo, and the level of care and attention to detail is incredible. I'm actually planning on using EventKoi for my wife's pottery business. It's just perfect for managing classes and special events. You can try the demo for yourself and sign up for early access by going to eventkoi.com. That's EventKoi.com. All right. So that if Optimization Detective is something that, you know, everyone bar extremely high traffic sites should maybe install as a way of just boosting their performance in general. I mean, and that makes a lot of sense to me, using Core Web Vital now, using screen sizes to So what about, is there anything that you see that people do on their websites that is kind of a waste of time, you know, like when it comes to performance? I always wonder, and tell me, am I off base here, but I always have just been suspicious about page speed insights. How much should we pay attention to that? Or are there other things that you see people constantly doing that's like, that doesn't make any difference?
Yeah. So, well, one thing there is the image style, like compressing your images heavily. That is insignificant compared to making sure that the image that is the most important gets prioritized in the loading of the page. So if you highly optimize your image, but you're still like lazy loading it with JavaScript, then your performance is still going to be terrible. Mm. So the most important thing is make sure that your images, regardless of whether they're highly compressed or not, it's easily discoverable by the browser to load as early as possible, and to have that with a high fetch priority so that the browser can start downloading it, because that's going to be the biggest performance win. And for page speed insights, there's really two aspects of that. There's, when you go to page speed insights, you're going to see two sections on the page in the report. You're going to see the section at the top is going to tell you the field data about that URL or the origin as a whole, if you don't have enough traffic for that specific URL. And then the section below is the lighthouse section. And those are the lab metrics. And by far, the most important thing is that first section. It comes from Crux, or the Chrome User Experience Report. And that's telling you what actual visitors, Chrome visitors, are experiencing when they visit your site. But the problem is, if you don't have enough traffic, like I don't, on your site, then you're not going to have enough data to populate that section. So you're not going to be able to see, you're not going to be able to see the metrics of your actual visitors. So then, if you don't have that information available to you, or if you want to get that information is like collected over the course of a month and it's aggregated. So if you're making changes in real time, you want to see the impact that they're having, you're going to need to go to the section below, which is the lab metrics, and that uses Lighthouse, and will tell you, and there's a collection of audits that are put together that try to look for opportunities to improve performance and compute a general score about how well your page is performing. But if you have great Core Web Vitals metrics being reported in the section above in the from the Chrome User Experience Report, the Lighthouse results are irrelevant. I mean, you could improve your scores yet further, your Core Web Vitals even further, if you maybe action on some of those recommendations from Lighthouse. But the most important thing by far is the Core Web Vitals that are shown at the top.
So since you've been working on performance, which has been a long, long time now, how has your thinking about performance in the browser changed? And maybe could you consider, like, forward into the future? How do you think, also, not just the past, but also how should we be thinking about web performance in the next 10 years?
Well, the Core Web Vitals really is the biggest change that's happened in the past 10 years. Before, it was basically using Lighthouse as the guide. And now with Core Web Vitals, we have something concrete we can use to target for performance benefits. But in the future, I think we're going to see new opportunities for improving page experience yet further with like I mentioned before, the speculative loading or the speculation rules API, to be able to use the browser to predict, speculate on what the next page is going to be to further improve the performance of loading that. So like if you install the speculative loading plugin, you can enable the pre-render load with moderate eagerness, and that will pre-render a page as soon as you hover over the link to that. And so then the page loads instantly, which provides, of course, a really great experience. But you can then pair that with a new web platform feature like the View Transitions API, which then provides a nice animation between the old page state to the new page state. So on my site, I use the speculative loading plugin with that pre-rendered eagerness, pre-rendered moderate eagerness. Terminology gets a little wonky, but sometimes the page load is too fast. So, you know, you're used to when you're browsing around the web, you expect there to be maybe a little flash of white, you know, when you navigate between pages. So sometimes it's kind of disconcerting to see, like, did this actually load because it was too fast? So I think that's an opportunity where view transitions can improve the user experience by providing some animation between those states so that you can have a fluid navigation experience even when it's instant. And there's a new plugin being worked on in Performance Lab for view transitions. So you'll be able to have speculative loading and view transitions plugins from the Performance Lab plugin installed and get those features on your site.
Well, that's good speculation about the future. But also about the future, we can't touch on like how things have changed recently and what the future is going to look like without also thinking about artificial intelligence, our least favorite topic on this show. So I'm wondering, have you noticed anything about how much Claude and Gemini and ChatGPT, how much do those guys care about web performance when they're writing code?
I don't really know. I couldn't really say, but I do know that Adam Silverstein, my former Google teammate, he used Gemini to feed in Lighthouse results for a given site audit and was able to use Gemini to provide recommendations based on like the site health information and combine those together and got some really interesting, useful feedback. He did a workshop about that at WordCamp Asia as well. But performance, I don't really know. I haven't seen enough of the feedback from LLMs to say how good or bad they are at performance.
What is going to be interesting, I think, too, is that the barrier to create these web applications is going down, as people are just able to put sort of prompts into there. But the question is, to Luke's point, is like how much is performance being considered as these things are spinning up and coming online? Because the LLMs aren't exactly known for their succinctness in code generation. So that's going to be interesting.
Going back to what you've talked about in previous episodes with the influx of AI-generated plugins and the plugin directory, I think that I think we should, maybe you'd said this before, but we should encourage the use of AI to generate those plugins, but not submit them to the directory.
Like, yeah,
we should have, and we can integrate that ability to generate such plugins in WordPress itself. So, like, it would be great if you could have like, when in addition to add plugin, if you could do create plugin, and that could create a plugin file for you.
That's so cool.
And
that's a great idea.
And drop you into the file editor and then you could give it a prompt, and it could then integrate with
and built in
AI with LLM to, like, even in like Felix's AI services plugin or browser based AI to then scaffold out the plugin, and you could have a, you know, experience where you create just what you need and not anything else, you know, because plugins are so full of bloat. You could, I think that'd be pretty interesting.
So that's a great transition for me to my last question as we're working to bring this to a close. Weston, I think it's fair to say, is it fair to describe you as like a believer in open source and just this open web stuff?
Very much, yeah.
So one of the things, and I've personally felt like mixed feelings about this, there's been a clear rise in what I would describe as like more and more of this proprietary web. You see platforms like Shopify and Squarespace and Wix, who I would, and many others. And it's been interesting too, being part of the you mentioned the HTTP archive. They have their like Web Almanac report, and sort of looks at the CMSs, and you can see sort of what's on the rise and what's going on there. And there's a lot of value that's being created in these proprietary platforms, right? It's not open source, but they're solving real world problems for folks. And that's interesting for a lot of reasons. For us over here on the WordPress side of things, though, how do I put this? I guess I'm interested in your perspective on this tension where, at least right now, it feels like the proprietary platforms are winning. They're putting lots and lots of money into acquisition, and people are hearing less about WordPress. There's still a lot of momentum. There's a lot that's going on. And I think the optimist in me is there's lots to be excited about, but I'd like to hear your perspective. You're someone who's deep into this open source ecosystem. You've been invested heavily into the project. I think you have an awareness of the proprietary advances, and how do you think about like all of that? Do you feel optimistic about the web still, this open web, open source, or are we nearing the end of it?
I am optimistic. I am excited about what I'm seeing coming to the web platform, you know, open web technologies. I mentioned the speculation rules API before, few transitions, many new capabilities like command invoker commands. It's a new web platform feature where you can do actions on a page without any JavaScript at all. So like open a dialog or open a nav menu just with static HTML. So there's a lot of cool capabilities coming in CSS, and just a lot of development being done to make the web more powerful. And I think that with WordPress and the open content management system ecosystem, I think there's more opportunities to leverage those early on and to be able to integrate those better, perhaps, whereas proprietary systems, maybe they are slower to move, or maybe they move faster, but they don't have the openness to be able to try interesting things or think outside the box, maybe. So I think with WordPress, there's a lot more opportunity because it's open and there's no guardrails, which, for better or for worse, allows you to do things that are interesting but also dangerous. So I'm excited about it because there's things to work on.
Right. And no business model incentives to get in the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, if Luke's recent experience on the plugin review team is any indicator, there's still plenty of interest in building for WordPress. And I'd love to explore that create plugin idea further, because to me, there is something about being able to build in better rails and like having a series of checks. Like if you were generating something inside of WordPress and you can be checking for performance, it can be checking for security. There's a lot of stuff that could be done to build better rails around that. It'll be interesting to see what kind of innovation there is there. Weston, any final thoughts before we wrap this?
Well, I was just going back to the our time in Austin, Luke, and I was looking at the photo album I had from that time, and I'm seeing a photo of us all jammed in the back of that car. I remember when we rode from WordCamp Austin back to the Airbnb.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the times that we've had together over the years, the three of us, and the good memories that we've had. And
in Austin and Sydney a lot also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is for me a big part of the value that I found in being part of this community is, being able to find shared interests and develop new ones. There's a lot of things that I really didn't care that much about before learning from you, Weston, you, Luke, and hopefully vice versa, even if it is early days on that front. And Weston, you please go ahead.
I hope that we'll be able to maybe make some more memories when you both come to WordCamp US in Portland.
Very much looking forward to that. Very much looking forward to that. Weston, thank you for taking the time and sharing with us and your thoughts and perspectives. For folks who want to learn more about what you're up to, what's the best way for them to get in touch? Is it your phone number? Or are you going to share your personal phone?
I don't like phone calls, as you know.
This is a rare treat to have you on a podcast. We appreciate you doing
video that. Video is better than audio, I will say. But yeah, my website is weston.reuter.net. And
it's very fast.
Yeah. And if you look in the footer there, you'll see all the different socials I'm on. But primarily it would be Blue Sky and LinkedIn, I think, are my top two nowadays.
Excellent. Thank you very much for taking the time with us, Weston, and we're looking forward to seeing what you build next.
Thanks for having me on.